Yes, welcome back to the show here on World Football Daily. It's the last one of the week and we're going out with a big bang indeed. Joining us on the line now from the Daily Mail, Mr. Sammy Mockbell, talking all things English football. Sammy, how are you doing today, mate?
Very good, mate. How are you doing?
Very well. Pleasure to have you back on the show. It's been far too long. You've obviously had maybe a little bit of downtime during the international break, man. How was it all for you? What did you make of England and the complete utter disappointment that's coming out of those two games?
Obviously, yeah. No, listen. The San Marino game, we were obviously expected to beat them. Maybe not expected to score 8 goals, but that was a perfect boost, I think, ahead of the Montenegro game, and it all looked to be going really swimmingly after the first half. We dominated that first period. Got the early goal with the Rooney header. We could have put them there 1 or 2 more, but. Second half was a completely different story. Just from the first minute, we switched off, and that set the tone for the rest of the second half. And I think we were actually...
Apologies there, Sammy. We just lost you for just a second there. Slight technical error on our end. You said it kind of set a precedent for the second half, then?
Yeah, you know, as I said, the first half was, I think, was going quite swimmingly, and then we had a really sloppy start to the second half, and it just kind of set the tone and set the precedent for the rest of the half. And I just think we should really sort of count our lucky stars that we actually came away with it from there with a point, because it could have been a whole lot worse.
I was going to say, it was an intense atmosphere, but obviously it's always difficult playing away, but when you go to somewhere like Montenegro, you're still looking at an England squad filled with Premier League stars. You would still expect them, though, to be able to get the job done.
Totally. I went to... I was in Moldova, in Chisinau last week to watch Montenegro against Moldova. And to be honest, they scraped a 1-0 win, but they could have very easily have lost the game against Moldova. They were dominated for large periods of that game. And I came away from there very confident that we'd get a comfortable win over in Montenegro. You know, not we wouldn't. I don't think we'd even scrape a 1-0. I thought we'd come over there, wave them there, maybe with a 2 or 3-0 victory, but it didn't materialise that way. And I just think there seemed to be a mental block with ourselves in those big games.
We can't get
the results that we need at the moment.
Do you see it as maybe we need to start looking at these England players and thinking they're not actually that good? We see them in the Premier League playing very well, but they're surrounded by a host of foreign stars that are there to, you know, help be the creative legs in their sides. I mean, when you take these players out individually, they have some qualities to their game without a doubt, but they're not on a world class level at all.
I think that's a very valid point, if I'm honest, but I don't think that was necessarily an issue on Tuesday night against Montenegro, because you pitch 11 of our 11 starters against their 11 starters, and barring maybe Jovetic and Vucinic, I don't think any of the other players have got into our squad, let alone the starting 11. So while that is an issue, I think against some other of the greater nations, the bigger nations, I don't think that was necessarily an issue on Tuesday night.
Well, let's move away, Sammy, from the depression for us England fans that was the international break, and have a look back to domestic football and the Premier League kicking off underway again for the final few games of the season. Sunderland, an absolute nightmare scenario now on this big slide down the Premier League table, losing Stephen Fletcher for the rest of the season and Catamol as well after he's gone in for surgery.
It's massive. Listen, those two players are key for them, particularly Fletcher. Obviously, the main thrust of their attack. I really fear for Sunderland. I just can't see where their next win's coming from, and it doesn't get much harder than this weekend. They've got a game against Man United at the junior, like the 12:45 kickoff. I can't see them getting anything out of that game, and slowly the pressure's building. And every year, every season, there's one team that gets sucked into it, and I just think Sunderland are looking precarious.
And you, as you say, they've got Manchester United this weekend. Maybe a hope for Sunderland in that attention might be on the cup replay coming up on Monday for United.
I think, by the sound of things, I think Fergie's going to possibly fielded two completely different teams. So I think the team that played on Saturday can just solely focus on the opposition in the game against Sunderland. So I don't necessarily think that would be an issue.
In second place, and obviously on the other side of Manchester City, Mancini's been absolutely livid about Vincent Kompany being picked for the Belgium squad at the moment. Is he livid more because he's worried, rather than wanting to close down the gap on Manchester United, which is seemingly, in theory, impossible from all conceivable conception, but is he worried about Tottenham and Chelsea coming up and usurping that second place that he's held all season?
I think there's an element of that, but Tottenham and Chelsea are so inconsistent at the moment. But I personally can't see that that materialising in terms of them, in terms of City losing their second place status at the moment. But I think the problem that City have had this season is that they've come off the back of last season and a massive high and winning the Premier League. They've just not been able to replicate those performances, and I think, given that now they're champions, every week their opposition sees that game as a cup final, and I think they've found that very difficult to contend with. But in terms of losing a second place, I don't think that's going to be a problem for them. I think.
Where does City go for next season in terms of do they spend big to improve on this side? Do you think to push United, or do they just try and get a better chemistry in the squad and get that teamwork and up the ante in their effort?
They have to spend. I know it sounds incredible, doesn't it? Given the amount of money that they've already spent over the past three or four seasons, but listen, what are they? 15 points? Is it the gap 15 points at the top of the Premier League?
Yeah, 15, Sammy.
How do you overhaul that? Obviously, the answer is not in the squad. Otherwise, they wouldn't be 15 points behind. So the only option that I've got is to actually go out and spend big. And obviously, I think it's an open secret that Edinson Cavani is their number one target. And by the sound of things, they're going to go all out to try and get him on board ahead of next season. And some of the figures that I've heard are astronomical in terms of how much it's going to cost to actually get him to the club. But if anyone's got that sort of cash, it's City, so I don't think they'll find that much of a problem in funding it.
We've had, obviously, you talk about cash being flown around, and Chelsea have had their ups and downs this season, plenty of downs really for them. Jose Mourinho down at Stamford Bridge this week, and a lot of talk about him arriving. Would it be the same again if Jose returned to Chelsea, or would there be a kind of a bitter taste in the air after how he left?
I don't think there'd be a bitter taste in the air with Jose. I think that the Chelsea fans want Jose back above anything else, and I think Jose wants to come back. He virtually admitted it this week in an interview. That, you know, he said his heart's still with Chelsea, and one day he does see himself coming back. The only thing that would stop that deal happening, in my opinion, is if a certain Mr. Roman Abramovich, refuses to swallow his pride, maybe, and not allow Jose to come back, because it was a big call for Abramovich to sack him, to sack Jose all those years ago. Maybe 6 years ago now. And for Roman Abramovich to swallow his pride and reappoint the man that sort of made Chelsea great, as it were, would be a big call. So I think the only thing that would be stopping that deal going ahead would be Roman.
Do you think it would be easier for Jose to come back and rebuild this Chelsea side like he did when he initially took it over? You look at the backbone and the bread and butter of that Chelsea side that for the last few years, and it's very much still got that Mourinho influence in it. Do you think the fact that Drogba's gone, the fact that Lampard's on his way out, Cole's on his way out, etc., would make it a lot easier for Jose to come in and just rebuild and create another Chelsea side that can be an absolute power force in English football?
I think so, and I think the ingredients are already there. If you go through the squad, okay, they're losing Terry, but Terry's now 30. I think he's 32, and he's only got 1 year left in his contract after this one. But you've got Cahill there, who's now emerging. If you look at midfield, Lampard looks like he's off, and he's going to be going to LA Galaxy ahead of next season. But in there now, you've got, you know, you've got Ramirez. Even David Luiz is doing a job in there, so, you know, at times. But you've got Ramirez in there, and up front now. By all accounts, and if you believe what you hear, Falcao is a shoo-in to be joining there at the end of the season. So he's already got a spine in place there. So if he can add a couple of bits around it, then he's already got the making of a very, very good side.
It's a very scary thought of seeing Falcao in the Premier League as well for anybody, that's for sure. Talking elsewhere now in the Premier League and Arsenal, we spoke about how problematic it is for Sunderland losing two big players for their end of season push. Arsenal going to be without Walcott for a while, and obviously without Jack Wilshere as well, and now Diaby going down for the rest of the season. This is turning into a nightmare of a year for Arsene Wenger. How big are these injury losses going to be for their push to get Champions League football back at the Emirates?
The loss of Wilshere is absolutely massive. Hopefully, the plan is for him to be back, and not next week against West Brom, but the game the week after that against Norwich. But they need to. It's a difficult one for Arsenal because obviously they need to make sure he's fit and that he doesn't break down like he did last time, which, you know, resulted in a 17-month injury layoff. But at the same time, they need him back because they need him playing in these final games. But, you know, as they look to overhaul Tottenham and for that top four place. So it's a bit of a catch-22 for Wenger in terms of Wilshere, but he'll be a massive miss. And as will with Theo. Maybe his performances have dwindled a little bit over the past few weeks, and a lot of his battles. Also, now obviously now he's got his new contract. He's taking his eye off the ball a little bit. I don't necessarily see it that way. I think he's played a lot of games this season, and maybe just I know he's injured, but maybe just a slight little break could do him the world of good going into the final five or six games.
And Arsenal looking to close down Tottenham in the race for fourth place, 4 points behind, but with that game in hand. You mentioned that it's obviously a huge loss for Arsenal not having Wilshere. And we've seen on a number of occasions, Sammy, these young English players getting built up for stardom. Obviously, Wayne Rooney was built to be the great white hope, if you will, for English football. And now there's plenty of critics who will say that he's not done it on international level and could be potentially on his way out of Manchester United this year. What separates Wilshere from Rooney in terms of actually achieving that potential that we've seen? Because there's many that would argue that Wayne Rooney hasn't achieved that.
But I think where do you sort of lay those, and where do you set those boundaries in terms of saying that Wayne Rooney hasn't achieved those goals? He's played in how many three Champions League finals. He's got, you know, a Champions League medal. He's up team Premier League titles, FA Cups. He's won a lot. Mm. And okay, maybe individually you've not gone on to achieve what we expected him to. He still had one hell of a career. Yes, he's not a Lionel Messi. Yes, he's not a Cristiano Ronaldo. But in my opinion, he still had one hell of a career, and he's still only 27.
But would you put Rooney in that world 11 that you kind of everybody every so often thinks about, especially at the end of seasons, you know, who would be your top 11 players from around the world? Would Rooney make it into that side? Would he even make it into a seven-man substitutes bench?
I don't think he'd maybe make it, if I'm honest. I don't think he'd make it on the bench at the moment, but there's some fabulous players at the moment, you know, particularly front players. You look at Messi's, Cavani's, Falcao's. It's absolutely, you know, awesome talent, and he'd be on the boundaries of the squad. He certainly wouldn't make the starting 11 in my opinion. But he'd be in and around the squad. But I suppose what does that, you know, in that raises many questions about the, you know, the talent in English football at the moment, because if arguably is our top player, can't get on the bench of that world 11. and maybe we've got bigger problems than we actually thought we had.
I think we do have plenty of big problems. Just finally, Sammy, before we let you go, just one last one. Reading, of course, bring in Nigel Adkins, former Southampton manager, for their last few games of the season in that desperation hope to pull themselves out of the relegation battle. Do you think Adkins can do this for Reading, or are Reading and possibly QPR both now lost at sea and destined for the Championship?
It's going to be extremely difficult, isn't it? They're sort of 7 points adrift, not many games left to play. They need to go on Championship, Premier League winning form to get out of trouble there. Adkins is a good guy who I've had a few dealings with. I was actually at his unveiling earlier this week. But to sack someone like Brian McDermott and then bring in Nigel Adkins, and let's not forget that last season Brian McDermott actually led Reading to Tottenham Championship, and obviously Southampton finished second. So to replace McDermott with Adkins is a bit of a strange one for me. I think it's kind of going from Diet Coke to Diet Pepsi. I don't think there's much of a change, and I wonder how much of a boost it'll bring to the squad.
It will be interesting to see if Nigel Adkins can pull Reading out of the relegation battle and maybe bring Southampton right into it and send his old side down. Who knows what can happen at the end of the Premier League, but Sammy, we're definitely going to need your insight as we head into the final few weeks of the season again, mate. It's always a pleasure to have a chat with you about English football. We look forward to getting you back on as soon as possible, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Take care. Sammy Mockbell from the Daily Mail joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Premier League football. Absolute pleasure to get Sammy on. Always enjoy, as I say, getting into a bit of English football with him.